Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Candid Rank Live Show, Puck Talk Edition. With Frank Stenishi. And and Pat Lake. Call in. Let's talk hockey.
Yeah!
Oh! Get out of the way of my tempo! Understand what it is with people. You try to get work done and they get in your way. It's just not right. Nah, just kidding. That was just a little fun. Had to give it a little hockey feel. Joining us now, of course, is NHLNFA.com's Pat Legs. I can't pronounce Legs. Ah, geez, Pat, you got two T's and two G's. What's up with you, man? You know what's up with you? I think you got to turn your mic on, buddy.
You can't hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, it's great to do a show. Great to get back going again. And, you know, thank you very much for, you know, giving me the opportunity to do a show together with you. And, you know, I'm ready to talk some hockey. This is a great time of the year. We got playoff races. We got teams in nosedives. We got teams on the way up. This is going to be a lot of fun, and I really look forward to it.
It is going to be a lot of fun, and well, first of all, let's get to know each other. You know, as does happen when you do shows, even when you're, you know, co-hosting with somebody, you really don't know who they are. So I guess this will be our opportunity.
Yep.
Now we know that you have a .com page, and I know it's very popular. You have a lot of people on there, and it's tell us about NHLNFA.com.
Okay, NHLNFA.com basically it's an NHL website that has all the latest scores, highlights, interviews, a lot of video, because we know a lot of fans are not, you know, big readers. You know, I could throw myself in there, even though this is what I kind of do for a living. We have a lot of videos. You know, we'll have every highlight, some post-game stuff, and, you know, it's just a place where the fans have a chance to actually write. It's a site for the fans, by the fans. We also have, you know, some professional writers in there. And NHLNFA is also an organization that we're trying to one day, you know, give the fans a voice. Because we always see, you know, Gary Bettman up there speaking for the fans, saying, you know, the fans want this, the fans want that. And, you know, it's time for the fans to actually have a voice of their own. We understand we're not delusional, that our voice and our vote will not count. But as long as they give us an opportunity to speak for ourselves, we'll be happy. So that's what NHLNFA is all about. Plus, we have contests every month. We have giveaways, everything free. Never ask anybody for nothing. We have a fantastic charity that we are partnered with, CardiacKids.ca, charity that helps families, and for kids that are having heart operations or anything like that, so they take care of all the, you know, their housing and all everything they need. So it's a fantastic charity that we've partnered with. That's cardiackids.ca.
Oh, cool. So any kind of expenses that they may incur over and above the operation, you guys help in funding?
Or
the charity that your cardiac kids does?
Yeah, we work with them. Like, we partner, not partner with them. They've asked us to, you know, put them on, up on their site. And we've also personally donated 2.5% of any profits from the website, if it ever makes money, right? Because we're still new. We're about 6 months, 7 months old. But NHLNFA is almost 2 years. The website is relatively new. But 2.5% of any profits generated from the site will go directly to the charity.
Yeah, you talked about being the voice of the fans and looking at things from the fans' perspective. I have some issues with Gary Bettman in the National Hockey League. We'll get into them a little later. I have some serious opinions about them and how they operate. I guess because you mentioned, you know, Gary Bettman saying that he did things for the fans, or they do things for the fans, I wonder sometimes which fans he's talking about, because I don't think local fans, you know, fans that want a team, the way it's going right now, it's going to be harder and harder for, you know, big groups of fans that live in communities that love hockey to have a team, because they're going to be filled with an influx of basically opportunities to watch teams from outside their community, making the need to have your own team, you know, be less and less necessary. So you end up being basically a TV or a telephone or an iPad viewer of hockey, not, you know, in person, like for places like Hamilton and, you know, out east in Canada, as a Canadian anyway, from a Canadian perspective anyway. We bring in the American teams to capture all the advertising dollars here, you know, and then take the money to the U.S. You know, it's, to me, I don't know, it's not really for our fans. It's really for the fans of the league making money. That's
yeah. Well, that's what it is. I think when he speaks about the fans, his fans are the owners.
Exactly.
His job is just to make money for the owners. You know, fans keep saying, "Why is this guy still around? Why is this guy still around?" Listen, he's done very, very good things for the league, growing it. He's done very bad things for the league, stifling its growth. But where he has done well is for the owners. And that's why the owners keep him around. And that's why, you know, I hear it all the time. I'm sure you hear it all the time. Why is Gary Bettman? We need a new guy in there. We need a new commissioner. This guy doesn't know what he's doing. But year after year, the owners are making money. The owners love him. The owners keep re-signing him. And until he stops making money for the owners or decides he wants to leave, he will not be going anywhere.
But the league historically, you know, the league historically has had ownership and leadership that has been very short-sighted. Even Gary Bettman, when he first came in, he came in and the first thing he did was tick off ESPN, you know, an organization, a TV network that was synonymous with hockey even before it was into football and baseball, for that matter. I think back then, basketball and hockey at the beginning were their main fruits of, you know, filling in airtime. And he came in there and ticked them off. And as far as I'm concerned, they took a step back with broadcasting nationally in the U.S., and it was because of him. So, you know, it depends how you look at something. We lived here in where we live here in Toronto. We had an owner named Harold Ballard. The guy was a complete, put it this way, he just didn't deserve to be the owner of a team. First of all, they jailed him. He was a criminal. And that alone should have gotten him out of the position. But, you know, that's the way the NHL works, right? The NHL doesn't care if people are in trouble with the law or doesn't care if, you know, some of the deals that they make are sketchy, to say the least. You know, I mean, there's been, it almost got to the point where they turned down people with real money to chase people without real money, people who had money.
Yeah, how many stories have we seen? Remember the Long Island?
The
guy with absolutely no money managed to buy a team with not a dollar, not a penny of his own money, and he had nothing. So this is, you know, the way the NHL used to run.
Yep. And under Bettman, I mean, Bettman has a boatload of guys that he supported as you know, as guys to be involved in the league. He's turned down, the same time he was turning down Blackberry Big Guy, he was bringing other guys in who, it turns out, didn't really have money either, you know, or didn't have money. Weird
it's
stuff.
The good old boy, it's the good old boys club, and that's what the NHL still is. And if you break the code, if you try to, you know, make them look dumb, or you try to circle around them and go behind their backs, they're going to punish you. They don't care how much money you have, what, you know, what you, who you are or what you are, and they're not going to let you in. And that's exactly what happened with Rim.
So I guess we should be careful what we talk about on the show then.
No way. We want them. We want them to hate us. That's the key.
Well, let me tell you.
If they like us, then we're doing something wrong.
I'll tell you a little bit about me. I used to do a sports show three hours a night on Rogers. And I had a cameraman, just to give you an idea where I come from. I had a cameraman that went to cover the Leafs with one of our reporters. And it was my birthday, and he said to Harold Ballard, he said, you know, it's Frank's birthday. Would you like to wish him a happy birthday? I'm not going to tell you what Harold said, but he referred to my background and asked me to make love to myself. So, you know, I get the idea of what it's like to not be liked by people in the National Hockey League. I was also, back in the day, I was not a big fan of the just to give you an idea who I am, of the Mr. Stevens hits, the ones to the head that you used to see on Sportsnet and on TSN. They show a guy crawling back to the bench, and they thought it was really funny. And at the time, I used to do midget and junior hockey and college and university hockey, and I wasn't involved with professionals that much. But it was amazing on the uptick when an event like that took place. When an event like that took place, the following day, you know, the young players that imitate these other players who are playing for their, you know, for money, for a lot of money, which is one thing. But to have these kids doing this kind of stuff. So I had this thing where I was 20 years ago, I was talking about concussions, you know, talking about what we know about boxers who end up, you know, because in boxing, the name of the game, the thing I was putting together was, in the name of the game in boxing, it's to knock a guy out, which is essentially to give him a concussion. That we know now, but I was saying it back then 20 years ago. And essentially the Scott Stevens hits were high, and the head was a target. And I don't think, you know, and I'm not saying this guy, you're turning him into a criminal, Scott Stevens into a criminal. I'm saying he's a great player, but he lived and created a reputation on a dirty hit. Now, at the time, people didn't think it was dirty. I did, because any time you intend to hurt somebody or intend to give them a concussion, to me, that's not a clean and a hockey play, as they refer to today. So to me, that's a dangerous play, a play that shouldn't be allowed. So 20 years ago, people used to laugh at me in the industry and think I was crazy to talk like that. Now, you fast forward 20 years ahead, and all of a sudden, what I was saying then is what everybody's saying now. And I kind of got out of this for that reason. It really made me want to upchuck a bit, knowing that people like and this is old history, you know, like Sportsnet, the announcers would sit there and watch a guy crawl to the bench and laugh and think it was funny. And those announcers know who they are, you know, and those stations know who they are. And that was disgusting to me. That was disgusting to me. I'm a sports fan. I love hockey. I love football. My favorite league is the CFL. I also enjoy a lot the National Lacrosse League. You know, and of course I am Canadian. I was born here. I spend a lot of time in a winter climate. So how could I not love hockey? So there you go. So, you know, the love of the game, that's what I'm into. And you know, the politics of the game, we got into it here a little bit, but I promise folks, from time to time, we'll hit on the politics of sports.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we're gonna talk about the game and what makes the game so interesting. So you've got an idea of who Pat Legs is, and that's a pseudonym you go by, P-A-T-T, Legs, L-E-G-G-S.
Yeah.
I go by the pseudonym Candid Frank. So I've created a little bit of a network here where I have Candid Frank Live Hockey Talk, Candid Frank Live Football Talk, and Candid Frank Live Lacrosse Talk. So they're all games that I love, and they all are worthwhile to be given time I have my favorites, and I love hockey, and it's a very popular thing, and I'm dying to see how people react to a popular subject like hockey on my show. I haven't had a chance to talk hockey directly, you know, with every intention. And I just figured, you know, after the Olympics, we can talk about that a little bit. And our guest that's coming in a little later, Rogers Sportsnet's Tony Ambrogio. Ambrogio is the guy that was in Sochi, Russia, covering the Olympic hockey and curling. And he had a front row seat to a lot of excitement. What was that excitement for you, starting with the girls winning the gold medal?
Well, you know, everybody loves the Olympics. Everybody, you know, I like girls. It's hard to put into words. You know, it sounds like I'm rambling here, but girls hockey is one of those things that we only watch really during the Olympics. And to tell you the truth, I know it's going to sound bad. I'm not a huge fan of girls hockey. You know, I understand they work hard, they battle hard. They're very talented players. It's just the game is not for me, you know. And I watched it during the Olympics. You know, I'm a Canadian, so I was, you know, proud when they won. But to be truthful with you, I watched only the gold medal game because, you know, that's the only game that really counted for anything as a Canadian. You know, and it's sad to say that more fans don't watch girls hockey because even women, a lot of women don't watch women hockey play either. And it's sad because, you know, they're great players, they're dedicated to the sport, but I'm just not a huge fan of it. But hey, I was very proud that the Canadian girls won. I think the problem with girls hockey too is that there's only two real good quality teams, and that's Canada, US. So it kind of makes the game anticlimactic. The rest of the games, you know that it's going to be Canada, U.S. in the end. So there's not a lot of excitement to the game until you reach the gold medal game. But I was still proud, of course. And the men's hockey was, you know, where do you start? Look at Latvia. Great, you know, won their first two games in the Olympics. Kopitar was a beast. And, Team Canada, I picked them personally to not even win a medal, you know, very good hockey picking their part. But, you know, they did the job. They defense first, offense second. I don't think that's the way they planned it, but that's just the way it seemed to have worked out. And it was a great job, and they won the gold back-to-back, first time since, you know, the 30s or something, Frank, 40s?
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah, since the beginning of the Olympics. Since they went to the Olympics at first, you know, when the Canadians went there the first time, and they had not been there forever, and this is the first time they've done it since they've been back.
Yeah, so
it's great.
A big feat.
Well, you know,
what I found surprising was the U.S. You know, they started off, you know, high flying. Everybody, you know, look at this team; they're scoring like animals, and boy, did they ever just screech. Come to a grinding halt. That was really odd.
Well, let's see. It's a long story that we can tell as far as the Olympics are concerned. We can start with the women. And yes, I agree with you in as far as, you know, there isn't the kind of depth in women's hockey. You know, I'd say there's like four or five teams, but really it always comes down to either Canada or the U.S. Winning gold. Sweden is starting to make some advancements. Now, when I was covering women's hockey and doing women's championships, I used to do the play-by-play for the Seneca Braves, and there was a young lady named Angela James. She was the first big star in women's hockey. And she skated like the wind, and she was built like a bull. You know, she was low body, you know, a low body center of gravity, and she was just incredible. And at that time, when I was doing the Seneca Braves hockey, of course, a lot of the Olympic players came from that team and other college teams, and of course around Canada as well. And the Canadian teams were pretty you know, they would win all the time. Even the Americans had not as yet, you know, done anything. And, of course, I'm going back to North York Centennial Arena in the 80s with Hazel McCallion. She was a younger mare then, 20 years younger, and dropping the puck in North York. And, you know, at that time, you know, North York was separate from the rest of Toronto. That was before Toronto gathered in all the boroughs. They used to be known as boroughs. And she came there even, and I think that's even before Don Cherry noticed there was women's hockey. So, you know, I saw the growth of women's hockey, and I disagree with you. I think it's far more interesting than it's given credit. But I can't argue the point with you that depth isn't there. The women that play today, and, you know, the position players are playing more of a position. They're playing more of a position game so that an NHL coach can coach them and not get frustrated because they have the talent and or the ability to understand how to play the game. And, you know, Zabada, the goaltender, she has now signed a contract. I forget where now, but she's going to be playing pro hockey with men. A kind of a C level. So I think it's here
in Canada,
in Georgia.
US, or
it's
overseas?
In Georgia. She's going to be playing in Georgia. I could look it up, I guess, and be more factual. But at the end of the day, she is going to be playing for a men's hockey team in pro hockey, and her ability. I got to tell you, I'm not saying that, you know, she's a Hall of Fame men's player, but she's definitely a Hall of Fame women's player. And I'm not saying that she's a top, you know, an NHL caliber goaltender. I'm not saying that. But I also want to put this out there. I'm not saying she can't be either, because quite frankly, I was impressed with her physical stature and her aggressive behavior in goal, and her reactions were awesome. You know, like, she had great reaction time. Now, granted, admittedly, you know, men fire the puck a little bit harder than women.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the moves that men can make, you know, there's just a learning curve historically that the women are on. But I like where they are right now. I like, you know, and on Women's Day, I think that's a good time to pay tribute to the women. And I'll tell you this, in this house, my four daughters' wife and I watched a few of the games. And we watched the Olympic gold medal game live. And I'll tell you, when I was, how old was I back then? I was 18 when Canada won the 72 series. And the excitement in this house was equal to the excitement I had back then in 72 when Canada won the cup. And I think the excitement of that game, admittedly, most of it really was, I guess, the biggest impact on the game was about 3 or 4 inches of the post, because that's what the puck found late in the game and gave the Canadian women a breath of life. And I think as much as it was a great game, and would the excitement been as much if the Canadians hadn't come back the way they did, I really don't know. But I got to tell you, it was thrilling, and we were excited in this house as much as we were when the men won, and as much as when the men and women won in curling, which in this house, I got curling fans coming up the wazoo here. I got four daughters that want to go play curling. So, you know, it was a wonderful moment. I am so proud, especially being a guy that, going back in the late 70s, early 80s, late 80s, early 90s, doing hockey for Seneca, play-by-play, and following it closely. And, yeah, it was, you know, it was one of those things where I watched and I could see. But one has to remember that when it comes to sports, what really matters is the athleticism within the group as opposed to, you know, within an individual. Individuals are great, like Gretzky's are wonderful. But if there's no Gretzky, the game can still be great, as long as there's competition.
And that's what, yeah, and that's what separates, ahead, you know, the Canada and the U.S. from other countries, is that Canada and the U.S. has probably the best coaching and the best resources that are put into women's hockey, you know, especially, the Olympic hockey. Look who was coaching the Team Canada for the girls. You know, Kevin Dineen. You know,
Yep, a month earlier, fired by his team and by Florida, and then ended up the head coach of Team Canada. And he was grateful for the opportunity, and he was surprised at the level of professionalism, if one can use that word, that the women had.
Yeah, and that's what the problem with other countries right now, what they're not doing is they're not putting the proper coaching. You know, we're seeing other countries starting to do it now, finally. Like you said, there's teams now that are, you know, at least when you watch the Olympics, it's not, there's no 15-0, you know, 13-1 games. A lot of the games are a lot closer. And if they keep this going, if other countries start pouring some money, pouring some good coaches, getting some, you know, quality, getting some players that are, they can develop some quality players, who knows, maybe one day the Olympics could be a real dogfight like we see in the men's.
Yeah, it won't arrive in my lifetime at that point. Yeah. I hope it does, but I don't think it will. And unfortunately, you know, women's hockey, like I said, is on, even when you think about it, Pat, you know, hockey in general, regardless of men and women, there's a progress that takes place. You know, it's not just a learning curve for the women. It also can be said that there's a learning curve for the men. I mean, when the men went to the Olympics this year, and, you know, the media, whether it was the media or people who thought they were part of the media, they gave the impression that this Canadian team had problems. And you know what? They quickly backtracked, of course, once they won the gold medal. But, you know, I don't really know what the media was saying. I wish we had somebody that you know, was in the media and was close to what was going on in Sochi, and also, you know, in preparation for that big event, which Sochi was. And wait a second, I got somebody right now. A guy named Tony Ambrosio, and he's the Sportsnet sportscaster, and he also has the glorious experience of going to Sochi, Russia. And you must have been thrilled, Tony Ambrosio of Sportsnet.
It was unbelievable. It was one of the best experiences I have had, and I was really glad I was there. Absolutely.
You know, Tony, when you left for the Olympics, at that point in time, there was so much talk about, you know, will the sites be ready? This looks like it's going to be a big failure. You know, there aren't enough bathrooms. That everybody was talking like this Olympics was going to be a disaster. When you were going and hearing those kinds of things, were you surprised when you got there?
You know, I wasn't so much worried about the facilities, about the washrooms or whatever. I was more concerned about security and safety, and it was very efficient and very smooth. So I wasn't surprised once I got there how well things ran and how smooth everything was. It really, really was a pretty efficient games and a pretty simple games to maneuver around, because everything was in one Olympic park. You know, like the mountain events were in the mountains, but the curling, the figure skating, the hockey, the short track speed skating, they were all right there in a walking distance from venue to venue because it was all brand new. So it was very, very, very well-run games.
Hey, unlike...
Hey,
you know, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Tony. How's it going? I haven't talked to you since you got back.
Hey, Pat.
From Sochi. Okay. Team Canada, you know, all the talk was, you know, can they play on the big ice? Will they be able to win gold? We saw that with Team Canada. For some reason, it turned into where it was a defensive team first, then offense. So even though we see, you know, the skill that Team Canada has, what was your take? How do you see this Team Canada? How did it get to becoming defense first before offense? Did they just kind of fall into this, or was this something that was planned?
You know what I think happened, Pat? I think they tried to score goals, but the other goaltenders that they faced were really good. Plus, for example, when they played Latvia, when they played Austria, when they played Norway, those teams would collapse four or five guys in front of their goalie, and they were blocking every shot that they could. So that's why you saw guys like Weber and Doughty score goals from the point, because that was the only way to score, because once you got in tight, they had so many bodies the opposition did. At no time, Pat, at no time did I think Canada was trying to play defense first. I think they were trying to score goals as often as they could. Like against Laffey, what do they have? They have 50-some-odd shots on goal,
yeah.
And they only scored two goals. And of those 50 shots, you can add another 15 that were blocked by players in front of the goaltender. So to me, this was as dominating a Canadian team as I have seen at the Olympics, more so than 06. I think they were more dominating than 2010. And while that 2002 team had a lot of big names, like Lemieux, like Sakic, this team in 2014, I think, was better. Exactly, Yzerman. I think the 2014 team was more dominating than those past Olympic teams Canada has had since the NHLers went to the Olympic Games.
And do you think they made a tactical change? They noticed that this is the way this tournament is going to be, and the coaches actually made a tactical change to change their system around from saying, since everybody's collapsing, we're going to have to change our style and play this way. Or did it,
you know what?
It just kind of happened.
I think it was a tactical style. I mean, if you look at that U.S. game in the semifinal, guys, I know it was 1-0, but did it not seem like a 5-0 or a 6-0 game for Canada?
Yeah.
Totally, if it's not for Jonathan Quick, Canada wins that game 3-4, 5-0. Do they not?
Mm-hmm.
Would you not agree?
Yeah, no,
the
system they went in with, as far as I could tell, and what they were talking about pre-Olympics, the intention and the plan was, and this is the irony of hockey, and I was saying just before I brought you on the air, Tony, that, you know, we were talking about women and how they're on a learning curve for playing hockey, but hockey in general is on a learning curve. As ironic as this sounds, back in 1972, the Canadian teams or the Canadian team and the Canadian players never saw anything like it. They never saw five guys step on the ice and play as a five-man unit. In other words, it wasn't just, you know, fire the puck into the corner and one guy chase it and then see if another guy can get it, or passes between two guys, or you know, try to beat the team with one player. And I think what's happened is, and this is ironic in my mind, and this is the progress of hockey. What we saw and how Canada won was much how the Russians played against Canada in 1972, where basically, because of the ice surface and its size, you know, you needed speedy defensemen that could get, you know, from because at the Olympics, there was a lot more space between the two blue lines than there was between the blue line and the red line. And they had to get really quick from their blue line to inside the zone. And I think they did come up with a plan that lended itself to playing better defensively because it was a five-man unit. And they thought like five-man units. And that's why, Tony, I agree with you. They really did master the United States because it seemed as though those five players could have done whatever they wanted when they wanted and how they wanted, and the Americans couldn't figure out how to, with the dynamite they had, the guys that should have been able to, guys like Kessel that should have been able to push through the blue line and you know, and maybe, you know, catch a defenseman by surprise, it wasn't happening. And, you know, they're full marks. The coach, you know, he has Swedish players on his team. And the Swedes, Tony, you know this. We know this, guys. The best defensive players in the world are Swedes. They are the best defensive players in the world. They have the best application of defense. And I think he's learned a lot as much as he's taught his players. And I think we saw a technically unbelievably sound team rip apart a tournament only to the extent they needed to. They didn't need to embarrass Latvia, you know, et cetera.
I'll say this, too, for Canada, why they were so good. Size. Their size is just too much for teams to handle. especially Ben, Getlaf, and Perry. That line was dominating. That was number one, why they won. Number two, you mentioned the defense and the five-man units, very effective. That six-person defense for Canada, especially Doughty and Weber, and to a lesser degree,
Keith,
were dynamite. And number three, they played their roles. Rick Nash accepted playing 10 minutes a game. Martin St. Louis accepted playing 10 minutes a game. Jonathan Toews accepted being the second-line guy, the third-line guy. They accepted their roles. And Russia, they never accepted their roles. Their defense was putrid. Their goaltending was awful. Sweden,
they didn't
score enough goals.
Yeah.
Their goaltending was dynamic. The U.S., well, they were good. They weren't good enough to beat Canada because Canada's size was too much for them to handle. It was like, guys, this wasn't close. With all due respect, I know there was panic across Canada. Oh, we only beat Latvia 2-1. Look at it again. 50-some-odd shots on goal. Another 50 to 20 were blocked. They dominated. This was as dominating a performance as you will see from a Canadian team. And here's a scary thing. If the pros go back in 2018, Canada should be better. Doughty will be 4 years older. Crosby will be 4 years older. Stamkos should be able to play. Those three guys alone will be better than they are right now. Scary.
Okay, Tony, let me bring this back to the NHL now. I want to get your take because, you know, St. Louis, we all knew, everybody knew that he was upset that he wasn't picked. Then it came out that he was having problems with Yzerman. And, you know, a lot of people, a lot of, you know, shows that I do and hear on radio, no way he's going to trade him. No way he's going to trade him. They're in a race. Do you think the rift was that bad, the animosity between the two was that bad that he had no choice to trade him? Or was it just a case of you came to me, you want to be moved, we're friends, so I'm going to move you? And what's your take on him leaving?
I think Steve Yzerman deserves GM of the Year for getting anything when St. Louis told him he was only going to go to one team.
Yep.
Apparently, this has been brewing well before the Olympics.
Absolutely.
And I guess the Olympic snub was the last straw. He's wanted to go to New York for a while, apparently. For whatever reason, St. Louis doesn't like Yzerman. Maybe he goes back to 2010. I don't know. When Yzerman picked that team and St. Louis wasn't on it. But look, guys, even when St. Louis was on this team, he didn't play much. Why?
Yep.
Because he's 5 foot nothing. They wanted big guys for a reason, and we saw why. On the big ice, they suffocated their opposition because they always had the freaking puck. Because they're too big to get them off. I don't care what anybody says. You can teach skating. You can teach defense. You can teach goaltending. You cannot teach size. And the Canadians had it in boatload. Yes, they could all skate, too, I might add.
Now,
only when they're big, they can freaking skate.
Tony, who do you want me to make the check out to? Brian Burke?
Well, it does sound like a Brian Burke team, right? They were
it does,
big,
doesn't it?
But they could skate. And let me add this, guys. If anybody thinks the big ice is good for hockey, for offense, just watch the Olympic Games. Because what it does is there's more room on the outside, but there's not more room in the slot. So teams are just collapsing the slot, and you had all this room on the outside. But that
they would have to, they would have to make the blue lines closer, Tony, to accomplish
it.
The blue lines,
it won't make a
closer,
difference.
Closer, I mean, closer to each other. Closer to each
other. No, I don't think it'll make a difference. I think the ice is too wide. The way the NHL game is now and the NHL ice is now, it's perfect.
Okay.
Like, there wasn't a lot of
great because the game is played in the middle of the ice, right, Tony? The game is actually played in the middle of the ice. The rest is just, you know, kind of decoration. That's where you saw Russia, you know. You got to see, you know, Ovechkin and Malkin and, you know, skate around the outside of the ice. But once they got to the middle of the ice, there was nothing going on. Nobody wanted to pay the price. Nobody wanted to get into a system and play with each other. And that's,
you know, the Russians
played
too much individual hockey.
Yeah,
and that's what hurt them. And but you're right. Like the big ice, all it does is force players outside. And in the old days, you could burn a defenseman wide on the big ice. Well, the defensemen are so darn good now; it's tough to do that nowadays.
Well, let's remember we're talking about the elite players. We're talking about the elite,
you're right.
The best
you're
of the
right.
best.
Absolutely.
You know,
you're
so
right. But I think the big ice, and I think the NHL ice surface is much more conducive to a better game than the big ice.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I wouldn't have said that 4 or 5 years ago. I wouldn't have said that. But after watching it firsthand and seeing the teams play the way they do on the big ice, to me the NHL ice is better for it, for scoring.
Well, you definitely can take a lot of shots from the boards there and have a shot at goal. There are a few players, though, that would have trouble in the big ice to play in the National Hockey League.
You're right. Some defensemen would, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, they'd have to switch their snowshoes for ice skates.
Yeah, no kidding. But I just think, honestly, you get more offense on the NHL ice because it's smaller, faster ice or smaller ice. You got to make a decision faster. It just, to me, it's a better game.
It's a very interesting viewpoint.
Tony, let me get. Oh, sorry.
Nope. Go ahead.
Tony, okay, let me get the. I want to get your biggest surprise at the trade deadline, and the one team that did the worst job of this trade deadline.
Oh, without doubt, the New York Islanders did the worst job.
Yeah.
How does Darcy keep his job is beyond me. As far as the biggest surprise. Was that Thomas Vanek went for so little to Montreal.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me are the two biggest answers to your question. The worst team without doubt, the Islanders. You know what, and a close second, Vancouver. I mean,
yeah. What
they did to Luongo and how they handled that whole thing, they are just – how does a team go from being Stanley Cup Game 7 finalist 3 years ago to where they are now? It's embarrassing.
President's Trophy
and
as
and
well.
They got rid of one they got rid of one headache. In Luongo, the whole Luongo situation, and now they,
Kessler.
You know, another headache for the Kessler situation. So they, you know, they traded one headache for another instead of dealing them, finding a way to deal them. You know, maybe it's not going to be the best deal possible, and we saw this last with Luongo. You waited and waited for the best deal, and ended up losing both their number one goalies. So you know, Vancouver is a real mess there.
Yeah,
hey
and
guys,
they went from two pretty good goalies to nothing.
When it comes to the trade deadline, and in deference to our guest, Tony, because he works for Sportsnet, and which in turn competes with TSN, the trade deadline has been a severely overblown, they're always trying to capture lightning in a bottle. You know, ever since Butch Goring was traded from L.A. to the island, everybody's looking for that guy that's going to take the team over the hump to win the Stanley Cup. This year, for the first time, in a long time, since the last strike, nobody gave away a first-round draft choice that's a first-round draft choice for this coming-up draft. Yeah, there's a couple of things the Rangers and Montreal have done, depending on how their teams do, blah, blah, blah. You know, a first-round choice could end up going the other way. But the fact remains, I think the question I'd like to ask, Tony, have you noticed how the teams have realized finally that do get by, and is it because of, you know, the new bargaining agreement and the cap that teams realize the best way to build is through the draft?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt that is because of the salary cap more than anything. And I think the salary cap kind of hurt this trade deadline. But again, look at the names that were dealt in 48 hours before the deadline. Luongo, St. Louis, Callahan, Vanek, Molson, some big names were dealt in the last 2 days before the deadline. So I was surprised there was as much movement because of the salary cap. And I think at the end of the day, the Toronto Maple Leafs wanted to make some moves, but the salary cap was really their enemy. And I think Dave Nonis of the Maple Leafs wanted to make moves, not so much a trade deadline move, but a hockey move. They wanted to acquire a defense or two defensemen that could be there for the next 2 or 3 years, and they just couldn't make those kind of deals because nobody was willing to give them what they wanted for what they're willing to pay.
And in turn, the hard cap hurts teams like the Leafs more than any other.
But you know what? I agree, but you could also make the argument, well, the Leafs wouldn't be in such salary cap difficulty. They didn't pay, you know, what they paid for Clarkson, what they paid for Kessler, what they paid, you know. Like, I guess Kessler's not true because his contract.
I think he's worth the money that they're paying him.
He's looking like the real deal. Anyway. Yeah,
he's looking like
no
the real
argument.
Deal.
Like, and I,
and just for the listeners,
you know,
just to help them understand, with the hard cap, for example, in the National Hockey League, you can't go over. you cannot go over. Last year, the Calgary Flames played with 11 guys on the bench because they couldn't go over the cap. This year, the Leafs played with two guys less because they couldn't go over the cap. And this is what happens. You cannot go over. It's a hard cap. Whereas in some other cap situations, they have tied to the cap a luxury tax. So if you have a lot of money and you want to spend $5 on a guy, or let's say $200,000 on a guy, it's going to cost you $300,000 to spend $200,000 on a guy after you go over budget. For those who are fans of the CFL and listen to our CFL show, you'll understand how that works. So a team like the Leafs that has money to burn, that has money, that can, and they did this year. They burnt a couple of mistakes. You know, they burned some money. Grabowski, the defenseman that went to Carolina.
Commissaric, thank you.
They lit some money on fire. And, you know, that's what teams with lots of money can do. Now, the new thing now, which thank you, Pat, for bringing up Luongo, because Luongo went to Miami. Help the listeners understand, in your expert opinion, how much was them taking his salary and taking Luongo at the same time, because now the cap's going to go up and the floor is going to rise, and Miami needs to spend some money to get to the floor.
Exactly. No, you're right. And that's why part of the reason people might think, boy, that's a weird trade for Florida. That's part of the reason why they did it, to make sure they get to the floor. Although I hear with their new owner, they want to be a top-end cap team next year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they sign a free agent like a David Bowling next year and pay him the $5 or $6 million that he wants. Because they're going to spend money. And that's what I wanted to ask you, too,
because a lot of Leaf fans are wondering, and you cover the Leafs, what's happening with Bowling? Is there any news, like, when he's going to be ready, if he's going to be ready? And when he gets back, you know, how productive do you think he's going to be? Because we saw with Carlson, you know, when he got back from this, it took him almost a year, well, half a season to get back, you know, the shortened season to get back to where he was.
Yeah, I think
are fans' expectations too high for Bowling coming back?
Yes, without doubt. And I think Bowling will come back next week or the week after. Look, he's an unrestricted free agent after this year, so he is not going to do anything to hurt himself because he doesn't have a contract next year. I think he'll be about 70% effective when he does come back. But I think a 70% effective Dave Bolin's pretty good, probably better than a lot of third-line centers anyway. My feeling is the Leafs want him back next year, but my feeling is they won't pay him what he wants. And I think a team like Florida will pay him what he wants because we have to get to the cap floor. And Dave Talon has that relationship with Dave Bolin from the Chicago days. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes to a place like Florida. That's just a gut feeling. I know the Leafs would like to have him back. And I really think, guys, if Dave Bowling can be effective, I'm not sure that's going to happen, and if Dave Clarkson can be as effective as he should be, those two guys alone will make the Maple Leafs a better team in the playoffs than they were, or they should be a better team in the playoffs than they were last year.
Yes, my problem with and you cover him really close. David Clarkson almost seems like he has the weight of the world on him. And, you know, I think, and I'm trying to say this in a nice way, and I'm going to try and say it in a nice way. Clarkson was a great New Jersey Devil, and when he played in Toronto, he was awesome. But he only had to play at the ACC twice, you know, and I don't think he can maintain that mental pressure that he puts on himself over a prolonged or protracted period. And he's having trouble. You know, and it showed right off the hopper from the get-go. He didn't ease himself into the lineup. He jumped over the boards, and I think that was a sign of his over-eager, over-aggressiveness, which isn't really a good quality for a player with his abilities, if you know what I mean.
No, you're right. It's been a miserable year for him. I think right now that leg injury has been bothering him longer than he's been letting on. And I think the other issue, too, is the role he's in. He was seeing power play time with New Jersey, not so much with Toronto. You know, he's playing with more skilled guys in New Jersey than he is in Toronto.
Yep.
I think the pressure he puts on himself, the way he's being used, it's really hurt him. But I really believe if the Leafs make the playoffs he could be a real, really big factor for them. I really
sure
believe
can.
That. So let's not
in the
give
right
up
scenario.
On him, Toronto. Yeah, I agree. He's got to be used in the right scenario, and I don't see that happening right now. Maybe it will come playoff time. But I wouldn't give up on Dave Clarkson yet.
Here, we only have a little time left with you. I want to ask you about Fright Night in Canada, otherwise known as Fright Night in Canada to me, is if you're a hockey fan in Canada and you're sitting down in front of your TV set and you're watching your Canadian teams play, you really can't be very happy. In the West, every Canadian team is out of the playoffs, and they have four there. They have one more than we do out here in the East. We have Montreal and Toronto that are doing okay. They're doing well. You know, they're in the pack to make the playoffs. God bless. Ottawa, the team that really has been
Everybody
the best thought. Canadian team over the past, it's fair to say 3-4 years. They made it to the second round. And that's all Canadian teams have done. You know, we've talked about, and people have listened to people talk about the status of Canadian hockey because the junior team lose. The status of Canadian hockey because, the Olympic team doesn't look like it's going to be that good, you know. And yet, here are the NHL teams who are really, really terrible. And I don't know, I'm not a Leaf fan. I'm a Toronto fan. Okay, I love sports and I love the city of Toronto. It's where I grew up, and I love watching Toronto be successful, whether it's the Blue Jays, the Argos, the Raptors, the Leafs, the Rock. It pleases me, and of course the Marlies. It pleases me, and Toronto FC. I got to make sure got to get the politics going. I got a guy here from Sportsnet. Why is it so hard for Canadian teams to be successful in the National Hockey League?
Great question. I think for the longest time, the Canadian teams have been okay, but not great or not really bad. And if you're okay, that means you're drafting in the middle of the first round. And very rarely do you get a Sidney Crosby or Jonathan Toews or a Patrick Kane or Evgeny Malkin picking 8th, 9th, or 10th. You've got to be really lousy or really good.
Yep.
And too often the Canadian teams have been too mediocre, like too middle of the road. And the Calgary Flames, I think, are a perfect example of that.
Yep.
Now, the Vancouver Canucks have been very good, so we'll give them a pass. Well, now, the problem for the Edmonton Oilers is, they've been really lousy, but their second-round picks have killed them because none of their second-round picks the last 5-6 years are making a contribution on their team. Yes, the first overall picks are, but not their second rounders, and that's where they've folded. And of course, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, outside of Galchenyuk, who was a third overall pick, I don't think those teams have had top three picks. So I think that's part of it. The other part is and I know this might sound silly, it's tough to get top-end free agents in Canada. When was the last time a big, big, big free agent went to Canada? I can't think of any off the top of my head, to be honest with you. Maybe you guys can.
Clarkson was supposed to be a big one.
Tony, did you hear this too? Because I heard this, from pretty good people that Kessler said, "I'm not coming to Toronto. Don't trade me there. I do not want to be in the fishbowl again." And this is something that we've heard that other players probably say that we just don't hear. And this is probably part of the reason why what you're talking about. How often do you think we players are saying that?
I think it happens quite a bit. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it's a bit overblown by the players, to be honest with you, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But I do think it happens, and it happens quite a bit. Yeah, it does. And I'm not surprised a guy like Ryan Kessler would say that. Because, in Vancouver, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of fishbowl activity there. So I'm not surprised he would say something like that.
It takes a special kind of character to be successful in that fishbowl atmosphere that is Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, New York, Boston, mm-hmm. Chicago. We saw a player in Boston decide to go play for Columbus. Some suggest that he went because he preferred making the same money but in a different environment.
Yeah, I believe it, because Boston's not an easy market to play in either.
Right, and I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that if you play in Canada, you're under a lot of pressure. But I also happen to believe that one of the problems with being in Canada is the taxes are higher here in Canada than they are in the U.S. In Florida, In Florida, they can spend, I think it works out to about 18% more on their team, on their players, right? 18% less on their players, and the players keep as much as they would if they're playing in Canada. You know, so...
Luongo Tap, you got a 15% raise just by going from Canada to the U.S.
Absolutely, for sure.
He doesn't hate his salary as much anymore. He doesn't hate his salary as much anymore.
No, you're right.
It's all issues. And besides, if Tony had an offer to work for ESPN, he would take those tax dollar benefits.
I won't lie. I would, no doubt about it.
Thanks, Tony.
No doubt about it. And you know what? It's a valid point. It really is. But the way to beat that is to draft well and to get those top three, top four picks. Of course, to get that, you have to be crappy for a couple of years. But it's better than being mediocre. It's better than being middle of the road. And that's what the Canadian teams have been too long.
And when they draft a player, you know, I the day that Kessel came here, I enjoyed him. I didn't like what they gave away. I didn't think it was – I thought it was silly. But from the day he came here, this guy wanted nothing to say to anyone. As you know, Tony, he was not – you know, he wasn't – I don't think you can say he was rude or anything like that. But he was obviously smart enough – I'm going to say, looking back, he was smart enough not to jump into the fishbowl, to take that fishbowl – term. He decided to concentrate on what he was doing and how he was playing, which I think is what he did. And he did a great job of impressing. All the Toronto fans want here is they want to see a guy who's trying as hard as he can and looks like he cares about the outcome of the game. And Kessel has been that every time he stepped on the ice, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I don't find him rude. I just find him shy. I don't think he likes talking to the media.
I was talking interpretation by people. I think he's shy, too. But people sometimes interpret shyness as sort of a guy being, you know, aloof or rude. But really, he's shy.
Sure.
And that shyness.
I was going to say, you're right. Carry on.
Okay. And the reason I'm bringing him up, we'll go back to Clarkson again. And Clarkson's a lot like a defenseman that came here a long time ago. He was a top defenseman when he came. The Leaf fans booed him out of the city. He won a cup in Pittsburgh. He won a cup in Pittsburgh right after that. And you know, there are some personalities when it comes to places. And I live in Toronto, so I know Toronto like the back of my hand, and I know Toronto hockey like the back of my hand. And in my opinion, for a player to survive in this environment, you need the Kessel kind of personality. You need a guy that doesn't take the bait, because there's a lot of freaking bait out there. And a guy like Clarkson just takes too much to heart and wants to be in the big picture, and he's defeating his own ability to succeed. He needs to take a step back. He should have taken a step back and taken a lead from Kessel. And I think that's the difference between the two. And the difference between some guys that come in here, they think they're, you know, they're God's gift to hockey, and don't realize that in this town, if you make a mistake, everybody notices.
Very valid points, and I think we're seeing less and less of Clarkson talking to the media, because I think he's taking the lead from Phil Kessel. I think he's getting tired of the criticism he's taking, too. I think that's a valid point. You want to certainly be accessible to the media, because if you are, you're accessible to the fans, but there's that fine line. He's got to find the right part of the line, if you will, where to cross. But you're right, playing in Toronto, playing in Montreal, playing in Vancouver, it's different. A lot more media, a lot more requests, a lot more demands. But, you know, I will say this, though, guys. I see walking on the streets all the time in Toronto, Carl Gunnarsson, and nobody either notices him, recognizes him, or bothers him. I've seen Paul Ranger walk these streets, and nobody has ever stopped him. So maybe if you're one of those lower type of Leaf players, you can walk in relative anonymity. So don't tell me it's always a fishbowl in Toronto for all the Maple Leafs. I don't quite buy that.
Yeah, but that is the point. That's great that you mentioned that. So there is the availability if one steps away from the camera and doesn't need to be, you know. But you know, we've got some hot shots here in Toronto. I mean, Lupul is, he's GQ, Mr. GQ, you know, and he loves the personality that he's putting out there. But he does have a level head on how he handles it, and I really do believe that Clarkson has to take a step back and become a part of the team, and I think that's the mistake that happened. And you know, it's wonderful, and you know better than any of us. When you step into a locker room, there are the mother hens there. There are guys who take people under their wing, and there are people who should find a wing to get under. Do you think, Tony?
Mm-hmm. I would agree, absolutely. You got to find that line. You got to find out when you should talk, when you shouldn't, you know, because, and I tell you what, the Toronto media, we're soft. We are, like, if Phil Kessel was in New York or in Montreal, the media would complain about his lack of availability. It would make sure he was available more than once a month. But because we're in Toronto, we are soft. We are really a soft, player-driven type of media. We give the coaches a lot more of a hard time than the media does to the players. And maybe because we're just good people, maybe because we're chicken, maybe because we just like players more than coaches. I don't know.
Maybe, Tony, that's the trap, is that you're so inviting to the players. Unfortunately, you know, you can't control, you know, as much as And I hope I don't insult you in any way. As much as you want to control the reaction of the fans, Tony, you can only put out there what you think you should put out there, and how it's interpreted is left up to the individuals. So sometimes some message that a player puts out there, or he's out there, you know, the way he talks, you know, may not be something that, you know, that's one thing about Toronto hockey fans is they think of these players as personal members of their family. You know, and they're very intense Toronto fans, and they love their team, and they're so devastated by the fact that they're still waiting for another Stanley Cup since '67. They work very hard for their teams, and they expect a lot from them.
Yeah, I would agree. I think
Tony, let me ask you one question before we end this with you. Do you think the Leafs have enough right now to make the playoffs? Do you see any way of this team finding a way not to make the playoffs?
I think that we are going to know if they make the playoffs in the next 5 days. The next 5 games. Who do they play? Anaheim, San Jose, the Kings.
The Triangle of Hell.
And then they have two more games at least, which won't be easy games either. So there's 10 points up for grabs in the next 5 games. If they get 5 points out of 10, I think they're in the playoffs. Otherwise, I don't think they make the playoffs. If they get 2 points out of these next 5 games, they're in big-time trouble. Let me just put that. They need to get at least, they need to win 2 games of the 5 at least and try to get 5 points somehow out of this net. That's my feeling. And it will not be easy. Those California teams are pretty good.
Third down to 11th is like 8 points difference.
Exactly.
That's
so
19. Oh.
Yeah, they got 11 teams. Yeah, and I will say this, too. Like, Fraser McLaren probably won't play much. I don't think Colesnell will play much, and that's because I think the Leafs have learned that last year when those guys fought, and even Mark Fraser, it seemed to really rejuvenate the team.
Like last night?
I think the opposition – well, yeah, but I think what happened now, the opposition has learned, don't fight those guys. Because it doesn't give the Leafs any juice. So nobody's been fighting the McLarens. Nobody's been fighting the Oars. So I think, Pat, what's happened, guys, is that Randy Krelov has decided, okay, if that's the way it's going to be, I'm going to play Ashton Moore and Holland Moore on the fourth line and try to get some offense because nobody's fighting those guys.
He likes Holland. He likes Holland a lot.
I think he does. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, and he's playing Carter Ashton a bit now, too, that he's back. So it'd be interesting to see how the Leafs play down the stretch. And then let's say they make the playoffs. Does Colton Moore play? Does Fraser McLaren play? Do you dress Paul Ranger because you want that big physical defenseman. Like,
oh,
to
God,
me,
I hope not.
As much as I'm intrigued to see the Leafs make the playoffs, I'm very intrigued to see what kind of team he puts out there should they make the playoffs.
Well, Tony, thank you for your time with us. We extended you a little bit further. I guess we're going to have to pay you overtime. What's that, an extra coffee or two? An extra coffee or two?
Yeah, exactly. Double
Tony,
macchiato, baby.
Yeah, well, hey, macchiato. You can come here and get macchiato all day, man. I got macchiato in the basement waiting for you.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you so much, Tony, for taking the time with us. Of course, you're with Pat Legs and Frank Stanishi with our guest, Tony Ambrosio, Sportsnet's Olympic coverage reporter, beat reporter, and also now that he's back in Toronto covering the Leafs. I got to tell you, Tony, a lot of people envy the job that you have. Enjoy it, my friend.
Thank you. I will. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you, sir. Okay, we'll take a short break, and then we'll be back after this.
Perfect.
Maybe. Yeah, what the heck. Yeah, what the heck.
Why not? Not for here.
Welcome to the Candid Rank Live Show, Puck Talk Edition. With Frank Stanishi. And Pat Legg. Call in. Let's talk hockey.
Yeah!
Oh, get out of the way of my Zamboni. Well, there you go. That's our opening, and you're listening to Candid Frank Live, and Pat Legs is with us. He's of the NHLNFA.com. I want you to check out his webpage. There's a lot of great activity there. There's a lot of great videos. But this here is your opportunity to talk in real time on the show about the game of hockey. We'll entertain almost any subject. The phone number here to call in is 714-242-5250 if you'd like to give us a call. You can also link up through Skype if you come into Blog Talk Radio, as some have. Tell your friends, Blog Talk Radio, you can find the show on there. And if you don't have the time to listen to it live, you can listen to it on iTunes as well as the archive in Blog Talk Radio. So once again, Pat Legs. Pat, that was a great interview, great chance to talk to a guy that understands, the intimate details of the game of hockey at the Olympics and at the NHL level. It was fun.
Yeah, and he's a great guy too, Tony. He, you know, that's what he does for a living. He works for Sportsnet. He covers the NHL, mostly the Leafs. And, he knows his stuff and got a lot of great information. And throughout the year, we're going to bring in more guys like that, some people that I know, and we'll get them in and get their expert opinion because they're the experts. We're the, kind of experts, I guess, but more fan. And
Definitely we're fans. That's the first thing. That's the first thing. I don't refer to myself as an expert more than a guy who's seen something enough that he recognizes it. No brilliance involved. It's just, creatures of habit, and I love sports, and hockey's one of the greatest games in the world, and I've had a chance, thanks to football, to exercise an itch that I had many years ago, And it's fun, and I'm glad to have met you, and I know we'll have fun doing this show. And I'll tell you one thing. When it comes to hockey, the best thing about talking about hockey is when people disagree. So I don't want any of you that are out there to worry. We're not going to jump down your throat if you call in. And,
nope.
You know, this isn't you know, the fan. This is a show that will give you the time to actually say what you think. We'll be patient enough with you to give you a chance. We won't hang up on you in 10 seconds. So, you know, that's the luxury that we have here is we're going to give fans who aren't accustomed, because there are, probably, Pat, you're one of them. I probably could have been one of them. Professional radio callers, I'll call them. You don't need to be that here. You call and tell us what you think. If you even have a question, we'll try our best to answer the question or figure out a way for you to get your answer. So we talked about the Leafs. Let's talk about the rest of the league, and let's start with the latest news, and that, of course, is the deadline, the deadline trades. And the one subject I want to talk with you about is I don't understand how you can be the captain of New York. I'm talking about Callahan now.
Yeah.
You're the captain of New York. They're offering you some pretty good change, and you turn it down.
Some very good money. Let's be honest. Callahan is a good player. He's not a great player. He's not an elite player. He's not a franchise player. And the money he was asking to start off was ridiculous. You know, he wanted over $7 million for 7-8 years. And, you know, I think Don Cherry kind of hit it on the head Saturday night, you know. They're offering you good money. You're the captain of New York. You know, what are you doing causing this kind of disaster zone for yourself that you may, you know, where they have to deal you? What happens now if he gets hurt from now to the end of the season? Does he think he's going to hit a home run again? Do you think a team is going to want to pay him $6 million and he's just blown his MCL, LCL, broke a leg, anything, you know? So he's taking a risk too. And, you know, this even going back, you know, he got traded for St. Louis. There's another situation where some of my members and some of my Tampa Bay fans are saying, you know, why is he acting like a crybaby? I'm talking about St. Louis. He's acting like a crybaby, stomping his feet, get me out of here, when the team is playing
I don't think,
so
I don't
well.
Think
this
he
team
did that.
Is set up.
I don't think he did that, though, Patty. I don't think he did that. I think what he did is he jumped at an opportunity. He jumped at an opportunity. Yeah, okay, good, because I think what he did was he just jumped at an opportunity. An opportunity presented itself that he's been trying to work out. I bet you the worst thing that happened this year was the team did as good as they did for him.
Yeah.
Because he did want to leave, you know. And not, you know, all due respect to Stamkos, he wanted to leave. There's talk that he wanted to leave for a while. He lives in Connecticut, which is, you know, a stone throw from New York. And he wanted to move to Connecticut to spend more time with his family, have more quality time. His kid is of, you know, like they were saying in Hockey Night in Canada, he's of travel age for hockey. So he's traveling all the time, and he doesn't get to see his kid. So now, with what happened with Yzerman, I think he's letting the fans read into that in a way that I don't think really happened. I think an opportunity presented itself. He gets to go where he wants to go. And the Rangers offered something, a deal that, as you said at the beginning of the program, you know, what wasn't anything to shake a stick at. It was a pretty good deal from the only team that St. Louis would go to.
Yeah, and Tony even said, you know, getting as much as he got for him when there's a, you know, it's a one-team-only situation is pretty good, because we saw this even with Kessler. Kessler, you know, he wants out of there, but he gave Gillis two teams. He says, I'm only going here or here. You know, make the best deal, and he couldn't make the best deal. So, yeah, good on Yzerman for getting Callahan. Listen, Callahan, you know, even though I said he's not an elite, he's still a good player. He's a heart and soul kind of guy. He's a muck. He's a grinder. He's a guy who's going to battle hard for you every night. You know, does it make Tampa better? I don't know. I personally think Tampa is not as good as they were with St. Louis, because whatever you think of him, the guy is talented. The guy can score. The guy can set up goals, you know. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see, you know, how this all plays out, not just for the Lightning, but New York, because we see he went to New York, and, you know, it's not like he's gone there and litting it up or, you know, setting up 1,000 goals. So we'll see how it all works out. But it's a very interesting situation there. And like
yeah,
I said, the fans' perception is that St. Louis was a crybaby stomping his feet and wanted out.
That
I agree
has,
with you,
he has
but that's
much
how
class.
The fans' perception
yeah, I,
the
I
fans
yes,
perception
but that's,
is.
But that's something with fans all the time. I always have my run-ins
yeah.
with Bruin fans because, you know, Bruin fans are the most ornery fans in hockey. They have an attitude of entitlement. You know, they really do. And that's okay. You know, that's all right. All it means is that when you get in my face, I'm going to make sure that you knew you were in my face. You know, that's all. And when you're successful,
you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's great. Like that, no, don't begrudge it at all. And the Tampa fans have a lot of reason to be unhappy. You know, I mean, St. Louis, you know, he fit into that team really well. You know, there's an adjustment now that's going to take place, I think, for both players in both cities. And I don't know if that adjustment will, you know, if there's enough time in the season for them to achieve that adjustment. You know, which they're going to have to do. You know, St. Louis and it was said on Hockey Night in Canada as well that you know the relationship between St. Louis and Stamkos was the same relationship that Oates had with Hull. And there's so much truth to that because if you look back and think about it, that you know Stamkos is a one-shot guy. You know, he's great at that. I'm not saying that's all his goals, but he has that one-time magic. You know, and Hull had that one-time magic. And that one-time magic for Hull put him into the stratosphere, what, 80-something goals one year? You know, and Oates was the guy that did that. And then when he did leave, when Oates was traded, you know, Hull had a hard time after that. You know, it got tough for him. And he ended up getting traded because of it. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. That trade's going to be interesting. The other trades that I find very, very interesting are the guys that we talk about when you were saying about Ranger not making it into the lineup, right, for whatever reason. It's not important why. You got a guy like Rovida. You got these guys, these no-name guys that are just incredible defensemen. There were a couple of trades like that, and I believe those will be more impactful than some of the bigger-name trades.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a guy like Rovida, the Ducks went out and got him because they, you know, they wanted more experience on the blue line. They wanted, you know, more grit. You know, he's still out with the broken leg, but he's going to be back. This is a guy that can, on the back end, he could play a shutdown role. He could come up, play an offense role, and they're important players to have. These are the kind of defensemen that we've seen from playoff to playoff that you can never have too many quality defensemen because defensemen nowadays with, you know, no red line can hold up guys. It's better now with the icing, but players are taking runs at defensemen, and defensemen are getting hurt all the time. So these are important guys to have, and I agree with you 100%. So, you know, we all see the big trades and say, how is this going to affect the outcome? Is this going to make them better? Is this enough to go to the next level? But these little trades, these small trades, are the ones that usually bring a team from becoming a contender to winning a cup. But we've seen it time and time again over the years where these little third line to second line guys come in and are the difference.
Number 5 defenseman, number 4 defenseman.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess Beauchemin wasn't available. they had
that's
him
twice. Typical Leafs, though. Yeah, that's
yeah,
typical
yeah.
Leafs, though. You know,
yeah.
too. It's coming back to the Leafs. You know, we chase them out of town, and then they go somewhere else, and they become superstars. And this goes back to the pressure of Toronto. Some players just can't deal with that pressure.
I thought Beauchemin just ended up too close to Quebec. He was too close to home.
Too close to home. And he wanted to
close.
Go back there.
That's where he wanted to go, really. But you know, so the little trades at the trade deadline, big deal. You know, we've got some games going on now, and
that's it. Can I just get the one trade? I want to get the one trade.
Oh, sure.
Before
whatever
we go
like.
to games, it was the day before, not of the deadline, but the day before, the one deal, the major deal that is I think the best deal that was made was Ryan Miller. Ryan Miller moving to St. Louis was the trade that the St. Louis Blues needed to make. A lot of people say, well, look at Halaka's doing well. He's playing fantastic there. But, you know, Ryan Miller is a proven commodity. He's a proven top three NHL goalie. A lot of people disagree with me. I think he's still a top three NHL goalie. The St. Louis Blues went out and filled a need, saw the weakness was in net, and went out and filled that need with a top-end goalie. And this is the type of move. The Blues are already a favorite, a cup favorite. I think this move here is the move that's going to put them over the top. Now, are they going to play the LA Kings anytime in this? More than likely, have been their nemesis the last couple of years. And maybe this is the type, because Quick has been a fantastic, you know, he's probably the best goalie in the NHL right now. You could debate, everybody has their favorite things, their number one, but having a guy like Ryan Miller to battle against a Quick is what I think the Blues needed. They went out, they filled the need, and I think they're a much better team right now, and to me, they're cup favorites.
They were cup favorites before they made the deal. They've been cup favorites for a while. And like you said,
yeah.
The biggest problem that they have, you know, this year, last year, was getting over and beyond some of the elite teams in their conference. And this year is no different. You know, there are a lot of teams that are going to give a problem to that great team that is St. Louis. And, you know, it is an amazing thing to watch as these teams play each other. And, you know, I can't believe how strong Anaheim is, you know, and how they've come. You know, last year, you know, they weren't that good. It's amazing how they've turned things around. What do you think was the, like, does St. Louis have to worry about a team like Anaheim? Is that going to be the team that, you know, it's going to be another L.A. team? You know,
they're
going to be spending a lot of time in California for St. Louis to win the Cup.
The West is, you know, it's, as much as people say the East is, you know, so unpredictable, yeah, it's unpredictable because they're just not very good teams. So you never know who's going to win any given night because who's going to be the worst or who's going to be the best of the worst. In the West, it's unpredictable because the top teams, that those top six teams are all so good. Maybe even down to eight teams are so darn good that whoever gets, that's why I love the Ryan Miller trade. To me, the difference is going to be goaltending in the West. If you get the goaltending, you're going to win. I think it's going to come down to that small of a factor. Not small, but that one factor in the West. Because all these teams are so good. All these teams are offensively so stacked to the rafters. Defensively, they're fantastic. So the goaltending and the Ducks are the team that nobody's really talking about. You're hearing a lot, you know, San Jose, because they were favorites for so many years. I think the Ducks are a team that might, if anybody is going to defeat the Blues, surprise the Blues, and get where the Blues don't make the Stanley Cup Finals, I think it's the Ducks that are going to be that one team that could actually do it. Getzlaf and Perry are beasts, and to have those guys, and Hiller is at the top of his game again. So, yeah, I think that the Ducks are the team that is going to be a surprise to a lot of people, but not a surprise because they're so well balanced. And coaching, I think, has been the big difference there. Listen, everybody knows, every Leaf fan that knows me, I am not a Randy Carlyle fan. I do not like Randy Carlyle. I think Randy Carlyle is a detriment to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Toronto Maple Leafs will never go anywhere as long as he's the coach. And I think we've seen the difference with the Anaheim Ducks. You brought in a guy like Boudreau, who's a player's coach, a tactical coach as well, but more of a player's coach. And there's been a big difference. A happy player is going to play a lot better than a miserable player. So I think that's been what the big difference is.
The big surprise in the West, when we're on the subject of the West, if the standings end up the way they are today, Minnesota would be rolling into St. Louis. And that is a team that worries me if I'm St. Louis. And that's a team that I consider them the darkest of the dark horses in the West. They're a team with guys on the team who know how to win. You know, they're also a team that people like to go play for, and they're happy to be playing in Minnesota.
Yep.
That's a team that I consider a major concern for any of the big three or four that are in the West.
Yeah, I like the Wild. Personally, I don't see them being a threat to any of the big teams. Listen, they got some good players. You got a beast like Suter back there who plays, you know, like he's like Char. He plays 30, 35 minutes a night, quality minutes. You got Parise. You got Koivu's a fantastic player. But they just I don't think they have enough. They're not quite there yet. Goaltending, they're not great. Yeah, they're a good team, but I just really don't think that I don't see them surprising anybody. Maybe surprising by getting someone to six games, maybe. But otherwise, I see them being just a stepping stone on one of the teams just making the finals, personally.
And you've got Chicago. They were, at the beginning of the year, they were a little higher in the standings. They've dropped a little bit. They haven't been as strong as they were earlier in the year. You know, I think that's more of a testament to the fact that they're a repeat Stanley Cup champion. And I think they're just taking a breather right now emotionally, and they're getting ready for the big run. They're the team. They're always a team to be concerned with, as are Los Angeles, for the very reason that you mentioned. Quick, the goaltender, he is no pun intended. Yeah, pun intended. He is really quick. I mean that's, you know, that he's been named properly. You know, looking at the East, we've got a few minutes left. Oh, we've got over a half hour left. We've got lots of time. Let's look at the East standings, and this is the one where I think I'm going to take my dartboard and start putting logos on it, because that's pretty much the only way I'm going to figure out who's going to make the playoffs. I mean, you know, not many points separate third place to 11th. You know, a streak either way, as Tony said, if Toronto doesn't at least, you know, in and around 500, they could put themselves out of the playoffs just with these next five games.
Yeah.
And the same is true for the rest of the team.
Yeah, the East is, it's two teams, Boston, Pittsburgh. They're going to make the playoffs 100%. You know, you can take that to the bank. And then after them, the last week of the season, I think, is going to be whichever team is the hottest rolling into that last week of the season is going to make the playoffs. Because, like you said, it's so close. Anybody gets on a winning streak of 5-6 games, or you get on a losing streak of 5-6 games, that's the difference between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs. This is going to come right down to the wire to the East. And like you said, you want to pick the East? Who's going to make the playoffs after Boston and Pittsburgh? Just, you know, close your eyes and point on a team, because you have, that's just as good. But besides Boston and Pittsburgh, you got Islanders, Buffalo, and Florida that are not going to make the playoffs. After that, it's wide open. Whoever gets hot is going to make the playoffs. That's it to me personally. The last week, whatever team is rolling, whatever team is hot, makes the playoffs.
You know what I find totally humorous? Over the past couple of years, when you look at the standings, and there are four teams that I'm going to mention. No, five. I'm going to go five. New Jersey, and they're all in order, from 10th down to 14th. I'm going to even include the Islanders in it. Washington, New Jersey, Ottawa, Carolina, and the Islanders. Those have been historically the hottest teams at the end of every year. So this could end up being an even tighter race before we get to the end. You know, those teams, New Jersey, I think last year they crawled into the playoffs. Detroit as well. I meant to mention them as well.
Yep.
Detroit last year came close to breaking their string of Stanley Cup appearances, you know, playoff appearances. And they're another team that plays well in the stretch. You know, so this is going to be a very interesting thing. If you're a Leaf fan or a Montreal fan or a Tampa fan or a Ranger fan, Philadelphia fan, you got to worry about Columbus as well. I mean, they came into Toronto and showed Toronto how you play hockey on both sides of the puck. And it's going to be a dogfight. to who makes the playoffs.
And it's going to be a lot of fun too, because
every fan's going to have a great time.
Seeing that, watching the excitement, and you know, part of the excitement is the anticipation, the being nervous, the being scared, what's going to happen, you know. That's part of the fun. And if you like drama and you like excitement and you like being on the edge of your seat, being a fan of a team in the East is exactly the type of feeling you're going to get, because it's going to come right down to the wire. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a couple of teams make the playoffs on the last night of the season, the last game, a couple of teams either making or not making the playoffs on the last game of the season. Now,
absolutely,
wouldn't that be fun?
Not if you're the team on the wrong end of that one.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we remember a couple of years ago, and you know, we talk all the time about, you know, how equal the teams are in the league. A couple of years ago, I think it was Philadelphia that won a shootout with, I think, New Jersey, right? They won a shootout with New Jersey on the last night of the season to make the playoffs, and they made it to the Stanley Cup Final. They didn't win, but they made it to the Stanley Cup Final. So if you're any one of those teams we mentioned, that's what could be in your future. That's as exciting as you can have it if you're a sports fan.
Yeah, and that's what's great about the East, that it's so, you hate to say bad, but it's so bad that it's good, because the entertainment level is, you know, at an all-time high in the East, and the last week of the season is just going to be a real slugfest. You know, you're going to be watching every period to see the scoreline of every other game, because every goal is going to have an implication for if there's a possible tie. So there's going to be a ton to watch, ton to see, and there's going to be a lot of nervousness, a lot of nervous fans. And I tell you, as Leaf fans, we're going to be right there at the edge of our seats, because they're going to be in a dogfight as well to make the playoffs. You know, a lot of people think, oh, they got the playoffs, don't worry, they're in a spot. Sorry, this team. And personally, I think the best thing that could happen to the Leafs, okay, Leaf fans, no hate mail, if they miss the playoffs, because the team is, you know, it's not as good as a lot of people think they are. And I want Randy Carlyle gone, because I just think he's a real detriment to this team, and he's causing problems with young players. You know, Gardner, we heard he's not liking Gardner, so that's my own, you know, my own personal opinion.
Well, I hear you, He's a tough guy.
I need him gone. I cannot stand him.
Well, I can't say that I dislike him. You know, like my kids, when they behave badly, I don't like what they do. Not so much what they are or who they are.
Yeah.
The function of the playoffs and making the playoffs, you know, I believe that the league did something on purpose, and they knew it would happen. And to me, it's a little disingenuous. I don't think the point system that is enacted in the National Hockey League really does separate the teams as to which teams are better or worse.
Yep.
Because essentially, they give a lot less points for a team to win. Relatively speaking, 2 points for a win is, when you think of a loss, is 1 point. That's not much of a differential for winning and losing. So, you know, it's almost like in the CFL, we joke on my CFL show about missing a field goal and getting a point, you know?
Yeah.
You don't really do much for it, right? And if you got 3 points for a win, 2 points for an overtime or shootout win, and 1 point for an overtime shootout loss, I think we would see more separation between the teams, because the teams that win outright would be rewarded, and then we'd get a better chance to see which teams are actually better. Because I think, like a card player, when they get to the third period and it's tied 2-2, they hold their cards close to their vest and are satisfied with the guaranteed single point, and then they're willing to ride out the end of the third period in the hopes of getting that extra point later. And I find
you're going to see a lot of that come down to the end of the season. You're going to see a lot of teams hanging on, looking just to get the overtime, so at least they get that 1 point. And listen, everybody knows I hate the loser point. I hate the loser point. I hate the way they do the point system in the NHL. I understand why they do it. They want parity. They want races.
Exactly.
They want it coming down for the last week. Every team have a chance. But I can't stand it. To me, I like the way your system is too, but I love the soccer system of points. 3 points for a win. You tie, you get a point each. And that's it. And if you do something like that, you're going to see teams going for it. You're going to see – because they know if you tie, that it's you know, you're losing ground. It's not a benefit to tie like it is now. To tie in a system like that, you're losing ground. It's not good to tie.
It's the opposite of what they're doing in hockey.
I understand why they do it.
It's the opposite of what they're doing in hockey. It's the exact opposite. You're over-rewarding a win and under-rewarding a tie because, quite frankly, there's a point that you know, doesn't get used because there was a tie, right? So, I get what you're saying, and that to me, puts a lot of pressure on teams to actually win, which sometimes, some games we watch, you may find it hard to believe, but they could actually be even more exciting sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, if they
it's a tough system to fix to make it perfect for everybody. Listen, I know a lot of fans who love this system. I know a lot of fans who hate this system. Just me personally, I hate the loser point. I don't think you should get if you lose, you shouldn't benefit from losing a game. I don't know. I guess it's just me, but
I agree with you. So the way I do it, I'm kind of splitting the difference between the way they do it in soccer and say, you know, the winner, like there's 3 points available each and every night. And the question is, how much do you deserve on that given night? And if you win, you know, in overtime or, you know, the minimum you get is two. But if you beat the team down and take them in regulation, then you get an extra point because you actually beat them. You know, if you finish tied at the end of the game, okay, you get a point. I can see why they get only 1 point more than the loser. And to me, that's fine. And I think you'd see a lot more separation in the standings. And some teams are better overtime and shootout teams. And those teams, you know, the pressure is on the management and coaching staffs to have guys on their team who actually are, you know, good shootout guys.
Yep.
Just because of that
extra shootout specialists. Yep.
Oh, you sure do. And as nice as that is, it almost seems kind of silly, though, you know. But it is what it is. And the standings the standings are what they are. And let's talk about hockey in general. You know, we have you know, the league is having a lot of fun, I know. And individuals are having a great time. Lundqvist gets his 300th win. What a great goaltender. Great thing for this guy. Deserves it. Has always, you know, played under the pressure of being in New York, you know. You know, and he's done a masterful job. You know, Leaf fans aren't so worried about him because he seems to not play well against the Leafs.
Yeah, I know.
But other than that, you know, he is a great goaltender, isn't he? And it's great to see him arrive at this point in his career in a Ranger uniform.
He's been as solid as they come since he's started in the NHL. You know, not only is he a great goalie, but every person I've talked to, he's a great guy as well. He does a ton off the ice in New York, a ton of charity work. And, how can you not be happy for a guy like that? He's worked hard. You know, this year he struggled to start the season, and most of it was because of the smaller pads, you know, because he's the type of goalie who plays deep in his net, and a lot of his pads would cover up some of that net. So he battled through that, and he's back to playing well again. And, how can you not be happy for a guy like that? He's just been a great guy from day one. You never hear complaints coming from him. You never hear anything but a good word. When somebody says Lundqvist, it's always positive that comes out. So, you got to be happy for him.
We also have the Stars have retired Mike Modano's number. Mike Modano, one of the greatest American players to play the game, one of the greatest offensive players in the history of the game. And Dallas is retiring his number nine. What a great player he was, and what a wonderful player he was for the Dallas Stars.
You know, every time somebody says Mike Pedano to me, all I picture in my head is him flying down the wing with the jersey flapping behind him, you know, looking like a flag. It just was flapping behind him, and he would come off that wing, and, you know, I don't know if anybody had a better snap or wrist shot with the accuracy that he had. The guy was an unbelievable player. He came to play every night, a loyal guy. You know, it was fantastic to see Dallas last night bring his jersey up to the Raptors. Another great player, another Hall of Fame guy that, you know, what a career. He was just fantastic. And even Detroit the other night, too, they retired
Lindstrom's.
You know, how much better does it get with Lindstrom? The guy was a beast back there. You know, like you brought up before with the Stevens, this guy, Lindstrom, was, you know, he had the puck, but he would slow the game right down to his pace. He would never be the type of guy that was going to bash you or destroy you, but he made one move right, one move left, and you weren't going to catch him. So, yeah, a couple of good ceremonies this week for a couple of solid, fantastic players in the NHL, and it was, you know, great for them, great for their families, and they deserved it.
Also, if we go to Alberta and Calgary, Nieuwendyk received an honor as well, the Forever Aflame honor. Of course, going back a lot of years, man, 89, I think it was, when they won the Cup.
89.
And he was honored by the Calgary Flames. He was a Leaf here. Missed out on the opportunity of winning a Stanley Cup in Toronto. They came very close. And he was a major contributor to that. And he's quite a good hockey mind as well. He's grown into a pretty good general manager, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's still in Dallas now, isn't he?
I think he is still in Dallas.
Yeah, well, look at the move he made to get Sagan. You know, that's a fantastic deal for the organization. You've got a franchise number one center. Being able to get a guy like that, that just goes to show the smart hockey mind that he had. Because, you know, listen, it doesn't take a ton of brains to be a hockey player. No disrespect to some of the hockey players that have gone to Harvard, this and that. But it's not like you need a Harvard education to play hockey. But you could see the hockey mind that this guy has, making deals like that, being able to flip guys. So he's doing a fantastic job. He looks like he's the real deal as a GM, and he's only going to get better. And, you know, Eiserman saying that he's not going to do 2018 if they go, you never know. Who knows? Maybe Nieuwendyk or somebody like that might be the next guy to step in.
You know, the one thing Canada has, too, is a great management team. And if you look at the guys that are running the Canadian team, they're also the guys that are running the teams that are near the top of the standings. Hitchcock is a great coach who knows the European experience as well as any coach in Canada. He's a great tactical coach. And then, of course, you've got Boston's great defensive play and of course, you know, so there's. I think it's more than just Eiserman. You know, as much as I love Gretzky and Eiserman, I think the biggest thing that Canada can do is bring in, you know, like the management, like the team did. You know, bring in the right guys that work together, that respect each other. Like, you know, like when Crosby went. And asked if it was okay if he had the captain's C, you know, that kind of stuff where they're more interested in the team. You're very lucky when you can put that kind of framework together. You will have success. Yep. You know, the Red Wings are that kind of team, you know, for example, what the Red Wings do. Here's what the Red Wings do. And they made a trade and they added Predators forward David Legault. I don't know what it is with Detroit, but they love taking players that are loved by their fans in other cities and respected by their fans. You know, player favorites, guys who are pretty honest and straight up. Detroit brings them in.
Work hard.
And, yeah. And Legwand is another one of those guys, you know, a Bertuzzi, Stephen Wright, those kind of guys that are a lot better than people realize, you know, and they give them the respect, and they immediately, for the most part, yeah, there's always failures, but for the most part, they fit into the Detroit way of doing things. They're just amazing how they do that. I don't know if it's a function of the coach, but regardless,
yes.
You know, they do have
To me, it's the coaching, it's the system, and, you know, being able to bring a guy that fit into that system, because Mike Babcock wants guys that are going to work hard for you every night. You know, they're not maybe some of the most talented players. Yeah, they have talent, Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Franzen, but a lot of these periphery guys, they're just guys who come out and work hard every night. You know, Legwand, like you said, another fan favorite, a guy there, okay, he wasn't, you know, a great scorer or anything, but he works hard for you every night. And if you have guys like that that are going to complement your top, you know, your top goal scorers, your top guys, the friends of that, and the guys around are the hard-working battlers who every time they step on the ice, you know you're going to get it on a shift. They're not going to take a shift off. You know, how can you not pick guys like that? And that's what we've seen with Detroit. That's why they're so successful. That's why 23 years they've made the playoffs. Success breeds success. And you bring a guy into that system that has been winning, and there's just that respect. As soon as you walk, you understand that, okay, I'm with Detroit now. I have to work hard. This is a team that expects me to work hard. And they know the right players that will fit in that system. Like you said, we've seen Weiss has not really worked out, but more than often, they know how to bring in the right guy to fit into the right system. And that's why, even though they look like they're not going to make the playoffs, Detroit, they have some injuries, you can't count them out until they're actually out anymore.
They proved that last year.
You cannot count them out. Yep.
A surprise, and I happen to think one of the best players that was picked up was Marcel Gotch by Pittsburgh from Florida. I like this kid. This guy impresses me. And I think they got a great one in him. And they picked up Lee Stepniak. This wasn't a year where the Penguins went after any big names, but, you know, I think they filled the hole.
They were in the hunt for Kessler. They were really battling hard to get him, but it was between them and the Ducks. I know that for a fact. The two teams were battling for him and making deals. They just couldn't get nothing done, but they were definitely in the hunt for Kessler. They wanted him badly.
For what they paid, they got pretty good from these two guys. They got some scoring from Gotch and Stepniak, and Gotch is a great two-way player, and they'll be able to use him really well in the playoffs. And as far as Kessler's concerned, the word out is that maybe Vancouver wanted too much, and maybe they have too high a praise for their own players, and they expect way too much, and the deal wasn't done because, quite frankly, they were asking more than either of the teams were willing to give back.
Well, Vancouver, understand, this is a very pivotal, why isn't that word coming out right now?
Could be a pivotal reason.
There you go. I can't get it out for some reason right now. Anyways, this is an important
moment.
Trade for the This is an important, because he's going to get traded. So this is going to be a very important trade. This is a trade, the difference between a rebuild or a retool, because he's going to go in the summer somewhere. And if they can get back a good deal, a player on the roster or two, someone's going to pay through the nose. You know it's going to happen. So this is a crucial trade for that. I don't know how to get across anyway. This is either they're going to rebuild or they're going to retool. If they
can, I got a word.
If they blow this trade, they're screwed. Yeah, if they
blow
this trade, they're screwed. Yeah, pivotal.
There you go. See, you got it. You got it, man. It's all good. Now, you know.
Yeah, it's an important trade for our organization. This is a make or break, because, you know, you still have the Sedins. If they don't get a good deal, now you have to rebuild, and now you have to dump the Sedins because you can't keep them during the rebuild. So it's an important deal for them.
And they're going to be hard to deal because they're twins and they won't go separate.
Well, they're going to have to go separate. There's no, unless it's in your contract, you have to deal me together, which I doubt. But yeah.
And then the contract says, if you deal us separately, we won't tell you which one you're getting.
I know. We're training for Server Daniel.
And
next
then,
thing you know, you got Hendrick saying he's Daniel.
Yeah, can you imagine that? They go, okay, you got traded to Pittsburgh? Yeah, I got traded to Boston. Where do you want to go? I'd rather go to Boston. Okay, I'll say I'm Daniel.
No kidding. I wouldn't be surprised.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it's,
right.
Needless to say, it's an important trade for the organization. And Gillis,
yeah,
I don't know if he's going to be around, but...
Every bad deal causes problems. And you know, we heard a little bit, you know, from Tony that, you know, sometimes it's a little difficult for teams to get the Canadian, you know, bring free agents to Canada. You know, I think it has to do with money and pressure. And, you know, I mean, it's obvious that the Canadian teams suffer because of that. You know, they can't offer the same kind of financial reward that the American cities can. And
yeah.
Some, literally, Florida, you pay no tax. The player pays no tax.
Yeah.
So, you know...
That's what he said. Look at Luongo. He's smiling
yeah.
like a pig and horse, you know.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, that's the real thing. And yet, that's why I don't believe in the cap. I think the cap is what's hurting the Canadian teams more than anything, because they need to spend a little more money because to
yeah.
keep money in the player's pocket. And the teams that are benefiting are the teams with, you know, good tax circumstances. You know, Tampa Bay won the cup, you know, and we saw a lot of, you know, Carolina won the cup back in the day.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we've got L.A., Chicago winning it. And 20 years of the Canadian team hasn't won it. And it's quite frustrating if you're a Canadian fan, you know, as I am. You know, I would not, I'll be the first one to admit, I may not be a big Leaf fan, but I don't think there's a city I'd want to see win the cup more than Toronto. You know, it's
yeah.
about the city of Toronto. So, you know, and I'm sure it's that way for a lot of other Canadian cities where there are people who aren't exactly fans of hockey, like in Calgary, who would love to see a Stanley Cup won because of the party it brings on and the excitement that it generates.
Absolutely.
You know,
well,
that's
where we agree, because I hate the salary cap. You know, that's, to me, I think it's part of what's stopping the game from growing is the salary cap. And not just on what you said, because I agree 100%, that's part of it, but, you know, trade deadline day, trades in general. Fans want to feel like they're a part of the game, especially in hockey. You know, everybody wants to be a GM. Everybody wants to be that, you know, make that deal, pretend to make that deal and talk about the deal. And the salary cap holds back a lot of trades that we used to see before, and a trade deadline day that was just a heck of a lot of fun. And if you stifle fun, you're going to stifle the growth of the league. And the NHL, if anything, the NHL needs to continue to grow. If not, it hasn't reached, it's not the NFL. You know, the NFL doesn't need to do anything to grow because they got gambling. Gambling makes it grow. Everything else is just gravy. So I think the salary cap is a huge, huge problem in the league. And I can't stand the salary cap.
Well, it helps keep other teams alive, you know. But in baseball, they don't have a cap, but they have, you know, sharing. They share, you know, money.
Yeah, there's another way.
And that's really
what the hard cap is terrible.
Especially a hard cap, because there's no forgiveness
yeah.
at all. You know, there's no forgiveness at all, and that money that the teams spend. But that's what they don't want. They don't want the teams. Well, you got to admit, though, I got to admit, you're right about Bettman. Bettman knows the teams that run the league are the mediocre teams, because there aren't that
yep.
many really big teams. So when the owners bug them, you know, the ones that are, you know, close to not making money are the ones that are telling them what to do. You know, if the team was a league that had more successful franchises than mediocre or cities that shouldn't have teams, I think a cap wouldn't be part of the issue, you know, because the rich teams don't want a cap, no matter who you talk.
Of course not, because you know, how would you like to be the Leafs the last 8 years? You haven't
or the
made
Rangers.
The playoffs. Oh, yeah, but I'm just using the Leafs as an example. You haven't
yeah.
made the playoffs for the last 8 years before last year. You're making a crap load of money, and at the end of the season, you're cutting a check for $15 million or whatever out of your profits to go into revenue sharing for the other teams that are playing in the playoffs and winning
Stanley
Cups,
right?
So you're paying, and beating the crap out. So now you're paying other teams to win the Stanley Cup. So
this is what I meant about Gary Bettman and him doing good for the fans. He's doing what he's doing for the business, and the fans that benefit are the teams that really don't have fans, you know. Very small fan base. You know, they keep trying to sell the future. They're saying, well, we got to do this because there'll be more fans in Phoenix later. You know, I promise, there's going to be more fans. It's a good idea. Keeping Phoenix in is a good idea because we'll have more fans in the future. I don't mind that. I think that's great if they think they'll have more fans in Phoenix. But I just don't think, I don't believe in socialism in sports, that's all. Sports is a business, and it's a competition. And nothing cuts the legs out from under competition than socialism in sports. You know, you can't pretend that a team deserves one just because other people can prop it up, you know. The next time, and the way I compare it is that I'm not against socialism, but I don't think people should live in million-dollar homes who only make, you know, $400 or $500 a week. You know what I'm saying? There's no need to have them pretend they live in a millionaire house.
especially in sports where, you know, it's the strongest survives. And using the Leaf example again, having to cut checks for $15 million, you know, so you've got to give money to Florida and for other teams to make the playoffs and other teams just to survive, you got to cut them from out of your profits. I'm with you on that. I don't think it's a good thing. I understand why they do it, but you know, this is a business. If your business model doesn't work. If my business model didn't work when I used to do plumbing, nobody came and said, here's, you know, $50,000. Keep making it try and work. Maybe one day you'll get it. No, you got to close shop and start over. And that's what the NHL refuses to do. It might be better.
Or make a real change in your business plan.
That's right. It might be better for some of these teams to, you know, go by the wayside and it'll make the other team stronger, make the league stronger overall. But that'll never happen because as much as, like we said, Gary Bettman works for the owners, Gary Bettman also has his gigantic, humongous, the size of Toronto ego that he does not want to look like he made a mistake. So he's going to do everything he can to not make it look like he made a mistake. And as for Arizona as well, because, you know, I talked to a few of the reporters there on other shows I do, and it wasn't just saving the team. They built the whole district around that arena of, you know, restaurants
and I understand
the
community
and stuff like that.
That's why the city agreed.
Even after they said, listen, we're not putting any more money into this. We're not giving $20 million a year into this pit. But they had no choice because, you know, it would have destroyed the whole surrounding Glendale area. So, but yeah, that's a different dynamic of why teams, you know, if a team doesn't do well, it should fail. Maybe in that case, it's a bad example because there's other circumstances. But yeah, I agree. If it's not a good plan, if it's not a good business model, let it fold, and then something that is stronger with a better business plan will be better and work.
But that's not the only reason, in my opinion. The other reason is that they don't want to lose a partner no matter how dumb he is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if a team's success is tied to them doing a good job and they can't do a good job, thank goodness you get rid of them. Bring somebody in who does a good job. We saw that happen in Minnesota. The team, you know, floundered. Well, it floundered and the team was gone because they were not being, you know, they were not reflecting what the people of Minnesota felt the team could be.
Yep, I agree 100%.
Well, we're down to our last minute, Pat. I have to tell you, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. I hope you've enjoyed our first experience together, total strangers, doing a program about a game that we both love. And it's been a pleasure.
I had a ton of fun.
And thanks for bringing Tony.
A ton of fun. No problem. I'm going to bring up, you know, as many guests as I can to come in. And, you know, this is, like you said, our first show. And it's, you know, slowly we're getting to know each other, and it's going to keep getting better. We're going to, you know, start working with some of my sponsors, maybe try to bring in some prizes and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a process. We're right at the beginning.
And thank you.
Pat Legs. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. Pat Legs, NHL, NFA.com.
And on Facebook as well, NHL NFA. On Twitter, NHL NFA and NHL NFA fan chat.
And if you have a room that you're a part of, you're more than welcome to be a part of this as well and advertise your room as well. After all, what we are is about promoting the game of hockey, and I hope you've enjoyed today's Candid Frank Live, and this, of course, is Candid Frank Live, the hockey show. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We enjoyed our hockey talk. Hope you did as well.
See ya. Still there?
Yep.